Yeah.
Can you add something to that, Maharaj?
Yes.
This is Rasa Gyan from Austin.
Hare Krishna. Thank you.
I was thinking when I saw the Mahabharata, it was like Dinesh is writing it while he's singing it. Isn't that how it goes? So you can sing something, like I can sing, but I can't read music.
Okay. So, who is singing it now?
Sukadev Goswami.
Well, I was singing it. Oh, Vyasadeva is singing it.
Oh, Vyasadeva,
Vyasadeva
is singing it, and Dinesh is writing it down. Yeah, I got that mixed up. Sorry, I was thinking.
So you were saying that it was...
But the point I was making is that you don't have to know something to speak on it. You know, like...
Okay.
I sang in a Bach choir for years, but I couldn't really read the music. I did it by hearing.
Okay, so that's another type of, I guess the same type of thing.
Yeah,
you can have a certain understanding, but not a certain proficiency in it.
Exactly.
In a simple way.
Go
ahead. Yes, go ahead. Yeah.
There's great opera singers who can't read music.
Yeah. Right. So it's the same general concept.
Uh-huh.
That he wasn't completely illiterate, you know, or didn't know anything, or couldn't understand anything, but he was definitely deficient in the general technicalities of the subject, because it's Sanskrit that you generally know the need to know to have a deeper understanding, but somehow or other the meaning was communicated, like someone who can sing in an opera without reading music, or someone who can understand the language, the spoken language, Sanskrit, but they not know the grammar, etc. But I guess the point there was that how influential the Bhagavatam is, that the power of it and the meaning it's potent within its own right, even beyond the intellectual content of it. I personally have an experience of that myself. I had 1 year travel. Mahamuni knows him well because he helped make him a devotee. There was this brilliant, brilliant young man that became a devotee. His name was James Bay. And he joined us in Tulaco, and then he traveled with me. And I was thinking, one reason he traveled with me is I started teaching the Bhagavatam. So I would speak 5 verses a day, and I would compare those verses. To this day, it's on tape. The first 2 cantos I spoke. And when I spoke of those, and he was such an attentive listener, that it went beyond the intellectual and mental. I called it experiential. You experience Krishna. So even if there's an intellectual and grammatical understanding, the Bhagavatam is still more than that, because it's Krishna in the form of sound. And that's why it's said here, after going through everything, it says we should hear from devotees, and such literature is best. But which literature is best? All the literatures, the Bhagavatam is best, because it's Krishna in the form of sound. But in one sense, it's also, we can say, it's like when you eat a meal, you don't need to know a lot about great cooking. You know, someone may be a great cook, but they can still experience the meal. You know, they don't need, you know, somehow the effect is still there. So there's something about the Bhagavatam that's so powerful that the effect, even if you apply your intelligence and you apply your mind, but if you do it in the proper way, it will go beyond any intellectual and mental conception. You'll actually experience Krishna because he's non-different than the Bhagavatam. And that's why Prabhupada, you know, would even say something like, if someone even touches the book, and there's verses like that, or even keeps it in his home, you know, so there's something to that degree, you know. So what extent Sukadeva Goswami knew it, he had some traditional deficiencies, because he didn't have the sacred thread. You know, he just came out of his mother's womb. So there was some traditional deficiency that one would generally need to have he was lacking things that people would generally need to have to understand the Vedas. But the point is, it's in the commentaries on the Vedas, it's influential. It still has effect. So, you know, really, when I'm thinking this, we should all just, you know, read Bhagavatam every day. You know, and let it influence us. Bhorijan is the prize that is shared with us, a very nice technique of reading called prayerful reading. It's a technique that's developed, I think, by people, Christians and things do this technique too. You don't know, should I read? How should I read? Should I really try to be a scholar? Should I understand everything? You know, or should I just read it through? Or should I study each word and try to figure it out? There's one type of reading where you're in the mood where you're actually meeting Krishna. You're meeting Prabhupada. You're meeting Sukadeva Goswami. You're meeting Narada Muni. You know, you're meeting Vidura. You're meeting the people who are speaking the various subjects, Uddhava, etc. And you humbly pray that, like you're meeting a great saint, let me be influenced by them. That's the purpose of reading. Let me be influenced by them. So here it says it's influential. Let me be influenced. And then you read very, very slowly in a period of time where there's no distraction. You just give 15 minutes. There can be no distraction at that time. It's serious. You're meeting these personalities, and you're actually associating with Krishna. You read in a very careful way, so it's influential. Now, Amuni, you had some other questions?
I did, although I'm a little confused from this one.
Let's go on.
I understand, then, the thrust of your thought on this is that the main point is that understanding the Bhagavatam is more a matter of one's devotion, and they can enter the mystery of the Bhagavatam by thinking of their devotion. But it just seems very strange to me to think that makes sense, but it seems very strange to me to think that Shukadev couldn't understand when Maharaj Pariksit was asking him questions because he didn't understand the language. Right? That to me seems crazy, to be honest with you. He must have understood enough. Like
Okay.
The instrument of Krishna.
Oh, right. You know, thank you very much. You know, I was also thinking, you know, when he first came out of the womb, you know, when he first came out of the womb, he was attracted. I wasn't thinking of the time where he just sat and was taught systematically by his father, right?
Okay.
I was thinking more that when he first came out of the womb, you know, and he left.
Okay, because
verses were, that's what I was thinking of. Okay, thank you for clarifying that. When he first came out of the womb, you know, and he wandered in the forest, they chanted some verses. But even that, you know, if you want to really clarify it, even in the Bhagavatam, it says, it's funny, when you repeat something, just because you repeat it from someone else without thinking of it, you sometimes get caught. But you realize, anyway, it's interesting. But it says, Atmarama Sutrayunayo Nigranat Kupitame, Mukankabhutikim Bhastam. You know, even though he was Atmarama, he became affected by the qualities of Krishna, meaning that the qualities of Krishna are not mundane. So it was obviously, and I have to say, it's obviously he was understanding the message. It's obviously he was, because the whole idea was, even though he had no attraction, when he heard the qualities of Krishna, he became attracted, but he wasn't attracted to anything in the world. He didn't want to come out of his mother's womb. So, but he was attracted to the qualities of Krishna. So what does that mean? It means the qualities of Krishna are not mundane. The qualities of Krishna are transcendental. So that was the whole point. So I agree with you that it can't be, you know, there may be some limitation, but it can't be that he wasn't understanding it. Because the whole idea was, is he was hearing about Krishna. Okay, good. What else? Thank you for that clarification. Go ahead.
So the second thing was that I have friends who are that I know in school that are Christians, and they're very spiritually serious. And in a way, it's nice that we have friendships where we can inspire each other in an environment which isn't always so conducive to theistic life or whatever.
Yeah.
And one thing that I've noted is that they consider their meditation, when they talk about prayer, although there are things in Christian tradition that are like repeating mantras, often for them prayer is sitting down and kind of opening one's heart to God, speaking to God, asking for direction, things like that. And it seems to me when I chant, I try to focus on just hearing the holy name, and sometimes I do pray, but is there some, how would you categorize what they're doing within our tradition? Because it seems like it's a very powerful spiritual process. But we talk a lot about hearing, and a lot of our hearing seems to be hearing narrations, or hearing philosophical discourses, or hearing the holy name. How would you understand that kind of practice that they're
doing? Well, I would say that that's Vandana. It's a practice that's offering prayers. And there are different types of prayers that you offer, right? Danyo Vodhya, that you express your insignificance before the Lord, you know. Then the other type of prayer is Samparandika. What is it? You're not advanced, but you're praying for some advancement, you know. And then another type of prayer is that you actually have a sentiment of your relationship with Krishna. And then, of those type of prayers, you can compose prayers by yourself, or you can repeat the prayers of great souls. And that's supposed to, that's considered very, very, very powerful, because the sentiment that you're aspiring for is very, very, is already kind of embodied. But, you know, you open your heart to God, etc. And, yeah, obviously, when you're chanting, that's what chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is. Because one thing we should do is think of the meaning of the mantra when we're chanting, right? I mean, the same thing. The mantra has a meaning. It's a prayer. It's not that you're not supposed to think of the meaning. The idea is in Krishna consciousness, and this is my full conviction, you know, the direct absorption in Krishna in the form of his sound incarnation is the most efficacious process to invoke within us our attraction to him. And that's really the goal of all prayer. You know, that's the goal of all prayer. The goal of all prayer is to actually develop purity. And what is purity? It's our attraction to Krishna. But I think, in one sense, what you would feel is, I would also feel, yes, this is very, very attractive because it's not mechanical. You know, it's very, very personal. You know, and if our spiritual life is without that, then we're misunderstanding what it means to just hear the name of Krishna. Although it's such a powerful process that to focus the consciousness, but how do you focus the consciousness? What enables one to focus the consciousness on something? You either have a natural attraction for it, or you have some understanding of its relevance or meaning. So when you're chanting the holy name, you have to either activate the heart or you have to activate the intelligence. Otherwise, how will you focus on something? You're not going to meditate and hear something that has absolutely no meaning to you. So either you're advanced enough just by hearing the holy name, you know, your attraction and your understanding is God and it's loving. Or if you want to meditate, then you have to control the mind by the intelligence, and you have to invoke or impose some relevance to that activity. So I think it's a fact. I mean, and it's a fact that just by hearing, we should just try to hear. But the problem, how to hear? You know, we should just try to hear the name, but how to hear? There's a process of hearing. And hearing means we have to focus, and we have to, you know, focus and the consciousness on the sound vibration. There's something that goes on. I'm sure it's understood in Sankhya or yoga. There's something goes on. We're allowed to focus the consciousness on a particular sense and be absorbed. But it's hard to believe that that's not dependent either on the attraction to the object of hearing or some understanding of its relevance. But at the same sense, so ours is kirtan, non-kirtan, and they're more into vandanam, or prayer, you know? So that's also powerful, but it's not as powerful as kirtan. But here's the thing, and I always remember this that Prabhupada said. He said, you know, a Vaishnava is better than a Goswami, right? A Vaishnava is better than a Brahmin. But then Prabhupada Nectar Devotion says, but if he's not following, is he still better than a Brahmin? You know, you can't say I'm better than a Brahmin. I'm a devotee. I'm better. Because what's better is absorption in God. Now, we have the most efficacious process. We have such a line of teaching and understanding. We have more opportunity to become more absorbed in God. But if we're not more absorbed in God, then does it mean that we're better? You know? Does it mean we're better or more absorbed in God than a Christian who opens his heart to God? No.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Can I add one thing to that?
Yes, please.
There was a similar question asked of Srila Prabhupada when I was in Vrindavan. And Prabhupada said, we're so fortunate that we have all these prayers by these acharyas and great devotees. And you repeat those prayers so you understand the proper way to pray. And then once you understand that, then you can pray in a more effective way.
Yes, yes. That's,
more or less it was something like that.
Yeah, no, it's definitely stated here in the Shastra that, you know, it's just a practical example. It's the disappearing state of Srila Prabhupada, right? And we want to pray and in the mood of separation. Now, we can go into our heart and meditate on Prabhupada and open our heart in prayer. But certainly when we hear a song like Yayani Mo Prema Dana Karuna Pachu, when we hear the affected sentiments, and then something comes to our heart that enhances our ability. So there is something very, very powerful of chanting the prayers from the perfected souls of the sentiments that we aspiring to have. And I think that's what Prabhupada is referring to.
Yeah, and then, Jeff, because it's like you said before, when you hear from the most elevated Vaishnavas, they invoke your love. So,
right,
by reading those prayers, they will invoke our personal individual sentiments so that we can pray from our hearts.
Isn't it? Do you remember in Ter Kadamba,
mm-hmm,
when we were sitting there? And, you know, it's a very elevated thing. And then you read from Rupa Goswami's, I think it's Stavamala,
mm-hmm,
you know, those prayers. We can feel them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Anything else, Mahamuni?
Oh, thank you. That was very nice. I appreciate it.
Okay. Would anybody else like to ask a question?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Who's this?
This is Gail.
Gail, how did you sneak out of your daughter's dance recital?
Actually, I got my window open somewhere around 20 after the hour. And
okay.
So... yeah, I got facilities, but I'm driving now. But
okay.
I just wanted to
Did you hear the answer to your question that you wrote?
Yes, I did.
Did you read it on the internet? I wrote you.
No. I just
okay.
Heard it.
Well, the answer is 108. and when you understand the question, that's the answer. The question will be the answer to your question. Okay.
Okay.
Why that happened? Okay, go ahead. What's your question?
Yeah, I just always wanted to hear you kind of spell out this logical flow between the sections that you discussed in the Pati Sandarbha. You know, first it's Sharanagati, then it's Sangha, then the next one is Kirtan, not Kirtan, because we're going to discuss that next, right?
Yeah.
The Kirtan after the Sangha?
What's that? I can do it very quickly.
Yeah, the logical flow, yeah.
Okay, well, Sharanagati means to say shelter. And shelter in what? Shelter in our relationship with Krishna. In other words, we have the confidence that that's where our need for satisfaction, for fulfillment is. Because without that Sharanagata, without that taking shelter, then it's going to be hard to enter into bhakti, because we'll be taking shelter of jnana, we'll be taking shelter of karma, we'll be taking shelter of material desires, we'll be taking shelter of intellectual speculation, we'll be taking shelter of nationalism. You know, unless you have that understanding, that knowledge, that faith, how is it the door to bhakti? How will you enter into that bhakti? And that's what, in one sense, that, you know, that comes from Ramanda Brahmate Monya Bhagavanji, Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai, Bhakti Lata Beach. That comes from the association of pure devotee. I mean, you know, the Bhakti Lata Beach, that faith, that conception in that this relationship with Krishna, this activity of devotional service, is the panacea to all ills, is the thing that will actually fulfill this burning heart. You know, this burning heart will be fulfilled by a relationship with Krishna, not by some temporary romance, not by some temporary position, you know, not by some temporary revenge, not by some temporary, you know, kingdom, whatever it is. So that begins, but to really advance, you know, you need the association of devotees, sadhu sangha, to really get that deep inspiration into increase. And I don't think it's just, you know, they're overlapping also, but the general progression. But, you know, you need the association of saints, people with that conviction, people who have that faith, who have that deep Sharanagata, you know, and then by association with them, it was the same thing with Narada Muni. He began with something, you know, by associating with them, he developed faith. He developed it. This is my shelter. And then with that faith, what happened? He began to hear from them more and more deeply. So it's some sense of shelter, and that leads to what? A Dao Shraddha, some faith in what? A relationship with Krishna, in what? Faith means to trust in something sublime. This will lead to the sublimity that I'm searching for, a relationship with Krishna. And then, sadhu sangha, and that will lead to the seeking out of the saintly people, and from them and their association, our bhakti will grow. And how? By hearing. And then, when you hear about Krishna, and you become purified by hearing, then naturally, without hearing, you can't chant about Krishna. It all begins with hearing. So hearing has to come before chanting, generally. And then smaranam, which will be the next state, is an advanced process that takes purification of heart by chanting and hearing the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Krishna. Then the other processes after that are subsidiary. They're additional. And they're actually probably born from Shravana, Kirtan, and Vishnu. It's Vandana. What is Vandana? It's chanting and hearing, and it's remembering. But it's a form of that. Yeah. Okay, Gail?
Yes, thank you, ma'am.
Okay. Are there any other questions today? One thing I'm thinking, and you can give me feedback, let me know. Maybe this will be good to do every once or once every month or once every 2 months. Maybe this is also a good way to do this sometimes, to stop and for clarification. It seemed that it was, it's nice to ask questions. Would anybody else like to ask a question or say Hare Krishna?
Thanks for the
Nectar,
Maharaj.
Hare Krishna, thank you so much once again for your time.
Thank you, boys.
Thank you. Yeah. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Okay, one more person like to say Hare Krishna? Okay, so, hello? Okay, so we can end for today. And, let's really all be there next week. On Sunday, I'll do something, but next week, we'll start the kirtan section. It's a very, very wonderful dynamic section. There's so many wonderful ways to look at kirtan. So we'll end from here. Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Vasasindhubhyascha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Hare Krishna.